Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher. Have a special treat for you this week. I did a story on Blake Griffin and the transition that he made from going from LA to Detroit, and some of the misconceptions that arose around him being part of the paparazzi tabloid fodder, if you will, whether it was dating Kendall Jenner or the many productions that he was involved in as a comedian, as a stand-up comedian, as a producer, and obviously had a few movie roles as well. And so caught up with Blake and we talked about what he missed and what he didn't miss and his adjustment to Detroit. I think you're going to be surprised by some of the things that he said. Obviously, if you read the story, you've gotten a good piece of that. But I thought it would also be interesting for you to hear our conversation with Blake. I couldn't get everything that we talked about in the story, so this is an opportunity. And again, there was so much that when we went over that we're going to break this up into two podcasts as well. So here is part one of my conversations with Blake.
I know you've probably answered this before, but where were you when you first heard about the trade?
When I heard that the trade was official, or when I like first heard
the rumors,
I had just woken up. We'd played New Orleans Sunday night, I think it was, and we got back to LA late. I'd woken up a little late and I was going in to work out, and a friend of mine called me and was like, "Hey, just a heads up, I heard Detroit's like trying to trade for you." And so I called my agent, Sam. I was like, "Have you heard?" He's like, "I haven't heard anything. Let me call Lawrence Frank." He said he didn't pick up. He's like, "No, he normally picks up my call every time, no matter what he's doing." So I'm like, "All right, whatever." I was supposed to go into Lyft, so I had to go into Lyft that day. I called Lawrence. He didn't pick up. He hadn't called me back yet, so I had breakfast, that whole thing. I was going into Lyft. Called him again. Still didn't pick up. So I went into Lyft, and it was like Jason Powell, our trainer, you know, he'd been there since I got drafted. And he was like, he wasn't like weird, but you could tell he like knew something that he like felt weird about. And so after I finished my Lyft, I was like, "Let me just go up to Lawrence and talk to him." So I go up there, and his assistant was like, "Oh, he's in a meeting." And I said, "Well, tell him I need to talk to him." So he goes in there, he comes back out, Lawrence comes out. You know how Lawrence Frank is. He's like, "Oh, always has something to say."
Yeah.
Never at a loss for words. He like looked at me, he like looked up and saw me. He's just like, like he had seen a ghost, you know? And so I walked in to his office and, you know, I'm like, he's like, "What's going on?" I was like, "You tell me." And he was like, "You know, you're a player of your caliber, you know, teams are going to," I was like, "Lawrence, I'm, you know, this is 9 years for me. I just want to know. I want to hear from you.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear from other people. You know what I mean? Like, that's all, you know, I get that this is a business." And he's like, "You know, you'll be my first call," or something like that. So I was like, "All right, thanks." So I leave. And as soon as I leave, I get another call from the same friend, like, "Hey, like, they're like trying to finalize details." I'm like, like, I was just in his office. I go pick up my kids, and we're driving back up to my house, and I get another call. I'm like 10 minutes from home. Like, "Hey, it's on the 1-yard line. they're looking at your medicals. And I get home and I'm jumping on the trampoline with my son and my daughter. We're like playing this game that we play. And I hear my phone, so I pick it up. He's like, "Hey, it's done." And I'm like, "All right, thanks."
Who said it was done?
My buddy who I'd been talking to this whole time.
Okay. And how's he connected? I mean, how
just happened to know people here. I don't want to get anybody. And so I just kind of put my phone. Yeah, I kind of put my phone up, and I finished. You know, I'm just playing the game, and I'm kind of like thinking, and like, but I'm also trying to like. This is, you know, like during the season, I don't get a lot of like, especially afternoons with my kids, and like, it's normally like bedtime or whatever it is. So I was trying to like put all my attention to that, and like worry about all that later, like once they like were taking a nap or something.
Yeah.
And then my phone just starts blowing up. I see it on Twitter. I see Woj just tweeted, like, the Pistons and the Clippers, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, all right, well, Warren's finally told him, you know, because they had kept it quiet. And then I see another tweet from Woj, like, maybe 5 minutes later, that, like, says the deal's done. Then maybe 5-10 minutes after that, I get a call from Lawrence, from Frank. And then, you know, 10 minutes after that, Doc. But by that time, I was, you know, fully with my kids, so I didn't pick up any of those calls. Sam had called me. He was like, "Hey, Lawrence is I guess is trying to get a hold of you." I was like, "Oh, you know, because I had told him as soon as it was done, I told Sam." And so he called me back like maybe 30 minutes later. He was like, "Lawrence trying to get a hold of you." I was like, "Not right now. You know, it's done. Like, whatever."
Yeah.
And that was the last. That was really it for like the whole trade part.
So how? When it first hit you, this is where I'm going.
You know, when it was
I'm
done.
Changing teams, yeah. I'm going to Detroit. Like, what was your reaction or thought?
I think more of my reaction was just like how it went down. That's like what stuck with me the most. Like I said this to people at the time, and I still say this today. People believe me now; they didn't believe me at the time. Like I was. You know, looking forward to like this start and doing something different in Detroit. Like, I think it was time. But it was just like how it went down. Like, after all that, like all my time there and after everything, you know, from the previous summer, I just saw it going differently if that had happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Out of respect for you, out of what you knew about the franchise.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was, if I call it like respect, but like, I took my meeting. I had two other meetings lined up and possibly a third. And they asked me to like make a decision quickly so that I could be in other free agent meetings. I went to the Danilo Gallinari meeting. I'd left my family on July 4th weekend to go meet with Danilo Gallinari. I spent, you know, time on the phone with different guys, you know, trying to convince them, hey,
sure.
Like, you know, come to this place, which is all part of it. And I did that gladly.
Yep.
Because, you know, I wanted to help our team, so I just saw it going differently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I truly, like, if they had called me or called my agent and said, "Hey, like, listen, like, this isn't like we're gonna move some things around," I would have been, I get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just the way that it went down. It just like obviously left a bad taste in my mouth.
Sure.
You know?
That's a whole other. It's a whole other subject in terms of how teams approach this. I've never understood that because I don't know that the Clippers are necessarily alone in that.
Right.
But
no.
There's this fear of engaging or just acknowledging with players.
Right.
I mean, it's a business. Everybody gets
right.
to a point where you understand it, right?
Right.
But there seems to be this great fear of actually. Allowing guys to know that something's going on.
Yeah.
And I don't think it, I think there's a way to do it where it doesn't interfere with your business. Right?
No.
I think the greater fear is that if it doesn't happen, now this guy's going to be, you know, pissed
right.
off.
Or right.
Whatever it's going to be. Right?
Right. I think the majority of guys have too much pride to stop playing or like, you know, mail it in. Like if it's the type of guy that's going to mail it in, he was going to mail it in anyway.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like I remember talking to DeAndre after I was actually here and I was talking to him because it was like right before we played them because he almost got traded. You know, he didn't like practice with the team for like 3 days or something. They said they had a trade you know, he knew about it, like, whatever it was, and then it fell through at the last second. And, you know, he still showed up and played and, you know, finished out the year well, and then, you know, made his decision this summer. So, like, that's my whole thing is, like, even if a guy does know, like, he's not going to stop playing because now he's hurting himself.
Sure, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my opinion on it. But I see, you know, you understand. Like, you don't want to, like, tell a guy, like, hey, we're trading you, and then it doesn't happen, and then you're stuck with, you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's better ways to go about it.
I agree. So how long did it take you to get acclimated here?
I didn't happen last year at all.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not at all. I like got settled for as settled as I could be, but it didn't feel like home until I came back for this season. And then once, like, after the season, like, I mean, a month, you know, okay, being here.
Yeah.
And then once the season started, like, that's kind of when I felt more of, like, an embrace from, like, everybody, you know.
From the organization?
No, not the organization. Community? The organization right away. Yeah. I would say, like, the community. People were very, like, you know, people were great within the organization, like helping me transition and feel, you know, at home. But, you know, as far as the community, I think there was fans that were really great early on. But, you know, I heard a lot of stuff this summer about how I was, you know, going to be their Josh Smith 2.0, or, you know, it was a bad trade. You know, I heard all that stuff this summer because, like, last season didn't really do a whole lot here to, like,
right,
to be able to kind of, like, show my worth, I guess.
Sure.
And then, like, once the season started, once games started being played, and once I, you know, kind of was able to show who I am as a player and as a person, I think it kind of, like, I felt like,
yeah,
more of an embrace.
What about for you, just from a living standpoint, in kind of finding your rhythm, finding your way around, like?
That happened very quickly. I mean, again, last year it was weird. I was in a condo here for like 3 weeks, and then I basically kind of Airbnb'd a house in Birmingham, like a mile from here.
Okay.
So I was like, you know, I knew this area a little bit.
Yeah.
And I knew, like, how to get to downtown and how to get to practice. But now, you know, after, like, being here for like a month, you know, I knew, like, my way around my house and, like, how to get to the airport. You know, so I don't have to, like...
You bought a place?
No, I rented a place.
Okay.
Just because I didn't know, you know, with the practice, like, going downtown.
Right.
I think I'm going to move closer.
Right.
So I wanted to rent for a year and see how I liked it. But as far as getting settled and feeling at home here, it was so easy because it feels so much like Oklahoma. Just in, like, a, you know, the people, the you live 20 miles from somewhere, it takes you 20 minutes to get 20 miles. You know, it's not like LA. It takes you five miles, takes you,
yeah,
30 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm used to, like, this type of flow, this type,
yeah,
of feel, and it just makes me feel more at home, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Cincinnati, and
mm-hmm,
I lived in the Bay Area, and I've lived in the Bay Area for, like, 20-some years. And, yeah, it's the same thing whether if I come here or, you know, anywhere in the Midwest, it's,
yeah,
I like these places.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, like, what? You know,
yeah.
Everybody sees me here, and they go, what are you doing in Detroit?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know what? I'm good with this.
Yeah. That was the same thing. I mean, people were like, oh, my gosh. Like, what was that like going from? I'm like, because it's funny because the people were saying the same thing when I got drafted. I mean, I got drafted to LA from Oklahoma. People were like, where are you from? And be like, Oklahoma. They're like, oh, wow. Like, how is it here? And I'm just like, it's a city, you know, it's different. But, like, this is, like, what home, and this is, like, what me for, what, 19 years of my life was.
Mm-hmm.
It's all I knew,
yeah,
until I went to LA. And still, even then, I'd, you know, come back home and feel at home.
Yeah.
You know, anytime I needed to, like, get away and really, like, recharge,
yeah,
I'd be home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't think people saw that. People just saw LA.
Well, that for sure. And I mean, that, you know, as I said, like, you fascinated me because you went to LA and, like, in my mind, you took advantage of everything that LA had to offer in the various things that you could do. You know, whether it's the Funny or Die, the creative stuff you did, the commercials,
mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm,
all of that. I mean, you had a very LA-like vibe. At least from the outside,
right,
from the exterior.
Right, from the outside, yeah.
And so that's where I thought, okay, if that was attractive and you enjoyed doing all that, what's it going to be like to abandon that and if you're abandoning it, going to Detroit. So set me straight in terms of...
So, I don't know. I mean, I think there's like, when I started doing, you know, you start doing, I don't know what, like, you know, I had like a couple endorsement deals I got right out of the shoot, and I would do like a commercial here and there. And I just kind of like, it was just part of like what my contractual obligation, I guess. It wasn't like I was seeking out things to be able to do, you know, commercials and things
right,
like that.
Right. And then they were really coming your way.
Yeah.
And you were taking, and you were doing, I mean, because the Kia, like the whole Kia thing, the whole Kia campaign was so visible. And
yeah,
so,
I mean, that was like everywhere.
So big that.
Yeah, I mean that, and I didn't realize the impact that I was going to have when I even signed that deal. Like, I really didn't. Like, I knew I had to shoot, like, you know, 4 commercials or whatever it was, but I didn't know that it'd be played so much on national TV, every game, every, you know what I mean, all the time. Mm-hmm. All I knew is I didn't want to go make a, like, my one stipulation was, like, I don't want to do, like, a regular car commercial where I'm, like, the force that drives, you know, like, that
right,
whole,
right,
like,
right,
thing.
Right,
like,
right.
I want to be able to, like, kind of, like, turn it on its head, and you know, I want to lean into the fact that I am doing a Kia commercial, you know what I mean? And that I loved. So I've just always had a love for, like, you know, comedy and things that I think are funny.
Yeah. Well, and where did that come from? Like, have you always been funny, or have you always been intrigued by that? Or
I've just always been like, you know, always trying to make my family laugh, always trying to make my friends laugh. And that's another thing I don't think people, I think sometimes people see it, sometimes people don't. It depends on who you are and how much you're around me and, like, you know, how close we are. But, and then also, you know, my dad, like, loves comedy. So sitting there and watching, you know, old TV shows, whether it's old Saturday Night Live or stand up or, you know, sitcoms, whatever it is. And then just as I got older, developing that on my own and watching my, you know, I grew up like in the Comedy Central kind of era, I guess, mm-hmm. of kids mm-hmm. is what some like comedians call it, where that was like the only comedy like available.
Yeah.
Couldn't like stream anything.
Yep.
So I grew up watching like a bunch of stand up on that. And then any funny show that came on, you know, I was like my show. Mm-hmm. That's like what I was naturally like attracted to. So that's just like why any commercial that I do, my preference is always to do something fun.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's what I'm going to have fun doing. I don't enjoy like going to do a commercial where I'm sitting there like,
right.
you know, reading, unless it's like something important.
Right. We're you have a very kind of dry, understated.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I've never forgotten I don't know if you put it on social media. I don't know where it was born, but when you tweeted out something about I knew 2 chains when he had 1 chain.
Oh, like, yeah.
To me, that it captures the Blake Griffin sense of humor. It's
yeah.
kind of just like a little bang.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of, I think I've always just had a very like dry, sarcastic sense of humor. And now it's just like my favorite is when you can like say something to somebody and they don't get it. You know what I mean? Or you say something and they do get it and you don't expect them to get it. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
Like that's
right,
like really right. that's what's like really funny to me now. You
yeah.
know, it's like as your sense of humor changes. But I have an appreciation for a lot of different types of comedy.
Yeah.
That's just my personal like yeah. style, I guess.
Is there anything other than is comedy like the number one kind of thing outside of basketball that intrigues you the most, or is there you strike me as being
oh no there's like a lot of things that intrigue me. I just think that comedy is like how I chose to go about, you know, like I said, endorsement deals,
yeah,
like commercials,
it's the most visible
like
part
of
your outside interests.
No, there's a lot of things that intrigue me.
Have you ever, like, I wonder about this too, because it seems like and it's going to sound like a weird question, you're good at a lot of things. If you were just good at basketball, mm-hmm. it almost feels like things would be a lot simpler, or people would have a more clear sense of of you, right?
Yeah.
But you got a lot of things going on, and I think that's part of what I think confuses mm-hmm. people in terms of who is he.
I agree with that 100%. I think that always comes from like doing and trying everything as a kid. You know, my dad like encouraged my brother and I to like play whatever sport we wanted. You know, he always thought like baseball would help your hand-eye coordination, so that would help you in basketball. You know, soccer, footwork. Yep. We played and we did everything. I played the drums. My brother played the guitar. We swam. We did track stuff. Not just sport. We played golf. Like we did so much stuff that I think I just have like a wide fundamental like skill set in different areas. You know, not necessarily skills. Like. But I just am comfortable doing a lot of different things because I've always done a lot of different things.
My parents did kind of the same thing. I had to play piano.
Right.
My mom was big on, and I'm first generation American. Both my parents are German.
Yeah.
Only person in my family to go to college.
Oh, really?
And I ended up going to an Ivy League school.
Right.
I talk about going way outside of your comfort zone. But I look at it now, and I've tried to do the same thing with my kids. Uh-huh. Like, just expose them to as much as possible and let them pick what it is that they
I'm, like,
do.
Very, very thankful for that, just because it's helped me not only relate to a lot of different people. Like, I could sit down and talk to, you know, whoever, and I'm not, like, that talkative of a person. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's always something an experience that I have or somebody that I know or whatever it is. But also my parents stressing, you know, education, both my parents being teachers mm-hmm. was like part of it too, because we always had to, you know, not necessarily have certain grades, but like we always had to like be learning and moving forward, you know, mm-hmm. and that was huge for me too, because, you know, it wasn't always like I had to memorize like all these things, but I had to be able to apply information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like a much bigger thing, especially that you're seeing now, you know, where kids don't, it's not, you know, people realize that like knowing the mitochondria of a cell, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like what the job of the mitochondria, you know what I mean? Like things like that.
Like, right. It's like what's the purpose of it rather than just.
Exactly.
So
that's like something I'm very, very thankful for, that my parents, like, you know, both my brother and I kind of got from them.
Yeah. Was there as much drama around you in L.A. as it would, as it felt mm-hmm. watching?
No, I don't. I think I've always said this. I'm like, you know, some teammates might not agree. I think most would. Like, it kind of depends. I always see, like, guys will leave and they'll be like, oh, man. It never felt like I didn't like dread coming to practice. I plane rides, bus rides. Like we had fun. Like we'd sit at the card table, play cards, laugh and play music and talk the entire time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The locker room wasn't a drag. It was only like when we lost, that weight just kind of like, and each time you lose mm-hmm. in a different mm-hmm. manner, mm-hmm. just like more outside. And then mm-hmm. I got to the point where like, any little thing became like a bigger thing. But no, I never felt like there was like all this trauma. I mean, besides like things here and there, I think everything just gets blown out of proportion. It's like the DeAndre, like, Mavericks thing.
Yeah.
Like we just went down there to like, he wanted to be pitched again. We went and pitched him again and he was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And we're like, all right, well, we're going to wait till, you know, till you can sign.
It was
like perfect. Like he wanted to do that because he wanted to go on vacation.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, we're all hanging out. And then we see all this stuff on social media and we're like, oh, like I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. So like I was like, I'm stepping into this even more so than it obviously is. So obviously part of that is my fault.
Right.
But at the same time, I think, you know, like if you know me, you see like my tweets and you see like what I'm talking about during the whole thing and you're like, oh, he's just like with everybody.
Right.
You know, so I guess part of it is my fault, but also it's just like how crazy things seem from the outside and how normal they are and on the inside is a very real thing, especially today with social media, you know.
Playing at another level, there's a real mental manipulating the game aspect to what you're doing that I don't know that I ever appreciated, and I don't even know if necessarily that you were able to fully utilize that, particularly after Chris came to LA, just because it was a different role. So I wonder, are you able to kind of put your, not just your physical, but your mental imprint on games here now in a way that, I don't know, that you could before? Was I missing it, or is it different?
I think it's different. The way I always kind of told it, and I still feel this way today, is like, we got CP, like, you know, everybody tried to make a thing out of, like, whose team is it? And, like, I don't think he cared about that, and I didn't care about that. Like, and I don't think, like, that many guys do. Maybe some, but I don't think as many guys care about that as people try to make it seem. Like, today, if somebody was like, this is Andre Drummond's team, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't affect me at all. Like, we both know I appreciate what he does. I think he appreciates what I do. So we don't, that's never going to be a thing that we ever have to like think about. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
I think we both kind of hype each other up and feed off each other like that. And I think it was the same thing in LA, but when you get like one of the best playmakers of all time and, you know, a great basketball mind and a passer, leader, whatever it is, like, you're not going to, like, take that away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I always, like, it was, and I was fine with, like, we're going how you take us. You know what I mean? How you see the game. And, like, especially now, me now, like, knowing what I know now, like, I see how important that was. And it's not that I, like, ever, like, I probably f***ed that up, but it wasn't intentionally. It was just because I didn't know better. Like, there's times where I tell Andre something, and I'm like, hey, like, when we do this, do this. And he's like, you can tell he's never thought of it before. You know what I mean? And I was in that position for him. I was in that same position he was with Chris. You know what I mean? And I think that, like you said, the magnifying glass of LA and people, like, looking at that and, like, trying to make something of that turned it into what it was. So I say all that to say that, no, I didn't necessarily have the same impact or, like, mental leadership, I guess, from that standpoint, but it also, like, wasn't as warranted or needed with that group, because you have Jamal Crawford, you have JJ Redick, you have DJ, who's, you know, his own, like, more defensive mindset mind. You know, early before that, Caron Butler, Grant Hill, Chauncey Billups, you know what I mean? We had, like, all these guys who know how to play basketball. And are very, very good at what at playing their role, and also just understanding, like, what's next. I never needed to do that.
Right.
And I feel more of a need now.
Gotcha.
You know, being here.
Yeah, for sure. I feel as if, I don't know, it felt like you became a show pony in LA.
Yeah.
You know?
I had to do what I was, like, good at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wasn't going to, like, shy away from, like, I had to, like, attack the rim.
Yeah.
I didn't have as many things to go to.
Yeah.
But I think I started to develop that. You know, I had, like, that year. I think the year that, like, that Chris got hurt, you know, in January, like, people kind of started giving me a little bit of credit for being a basketball player. And, not just an athlete. But, again, when you – that was out of necessity. So then when you bring CP back in, who's better at all those things – You let him do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what he has to do. So, you know, I think people always thought it was, like, me struggling to, like, try to do that and, like, not let him do that or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, it was just figuring out the flow. Like, I always tried to be, like, the guy that, like, filled the need that the team had.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we had the playmaker in CP, a closer. We had a shooter in JJ. We had a big in DeAndre. So then, you know, I always think back to, we had, like, such a good, like, thing in LA. Like, we would, you know, run a floppy set, go to JJ. If he didn't have it, he was right back to Chris. I was already stepping up into a step up. I was rolling. If he got doubled, he was to me. I had DJ at the rim, or I had JJ again, or Matt Barnes, or whoever it was in the corner. You know what I mean? We had such a, like, figured out, flow and offense that, like, everybody just kind of did their thing. I never really like, it was never really like a, I wish I could do more thing.
That said, I always felt like, you know, the things that made you particularly unique was your ball handling, and that your passing was way underrated, and that simply because of Chris, they weren't able to fully utilize those aspects of your game. It mm-hmm. wasn't necessarily that there was a struggle. It was just kind of like you got these resources, and you can't use them to their fullest extent.
Right.
Did you guys feel that? I mean, did you feel like you were getting the most out of what you had, or did it always feel like, you know what? Like, I look at Stephen Clay, for example. Like, it's, there's a great fit there because Clay's going to defend. You know, Clay can do a lot of things without the ball. That fits right
exactly
so well with Steph.
And
that's a simple example.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I felt more like, I never felt like I was like being held back. I just feel like, I can't do it all. He can't do it all. JJ can't do it all. But like together we were like, and I'm not saying this, you know, without having won anything. It's like, that's people's thing. It's like, well, you didn't do anything there. We had like good teams and like people knew we were a good team. Mm-hmm. Like we, for whatever reason or another, we didn't get it done, but we could still be a good team. Mm-hmm. Just to win. I don't know. I never felt like I knew I needed those guys. You know what I mean? Hmm. Yeah, I knew I needed those guys the whole time. So even like when CP went out, like Darren Collison came in and was unbelievable for us.
Yeah.
Jamal Crawford was unbelievable for us. So was JJ. DJ, you know, like guys really, really stepped up. And like that year, I kind of got most of the credit. But there was, I mean, there was like big plays late in games where guys were hitting shots, you know, DHO to them, or I'd hit, you know, whatever it was. And you know, winning games for us. And like, so I knew that, like, I'm smart enough to know, you know, to know that, and I've always known that,
right?
But like I said, I think all the outside just got inside.
I think that's what gets you, I don't want to say in trouble, but I think where there's misperception, because I think you see through a lot of things. And there's, and I, and I, it's funny when I watch you in an interview or whatever, I can tell instantly when the question is asked, like there's like a little smirk or there's just like a little change. And mm-hmm. I know something sarcastic or that underlying little
jab
is coming. And I think there's a lot of people that don't, because you do it in sort of a straightforward manner, that mm-hmm. people don't pick up on it.
No.
And then it becomes interpreted as something else.
You know,
right?
Again, just like, what was I saying? Like the whole tweet thing during the DeAndre thing, part of that's my fault, but part of that's just who I am. Yeah. And I'm like, especially now, I'm very, very comfortable and willing to live with exactly who I am, because I feel much better when I'm just myself, and like I don't have to like, you know, hold back or like, I think that's just like, as I've gotten older, that's like where I don't hold as many grudges.
Yeah.
And I'm also very much more comfortable being myself. Not that I was uncomfortable, but just like, I don't feel like I have to like hide that, you know. I can just kind of, you say what you say and you deal with the consequences or whatever it is.
By the way, happy birthday.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
3-0, right?
Yeah. 30. Yeah.
How does it feel to be? Everybody makes such a big deal about that milestone.
I always, you know, you always get like the text, like, how's it feel being 30? And I'm just like, it's like a day
later from 29.
You know, it's like, I don't know. That question always gets me. Because I really do feel like I always hear people say like, man, my 20s, like, or whatever it is. I always feel like I'm at my best at whatever age I am.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, because I've applied, you know, things. I'm not, you know, I hope I'm never like one of those people that like is looking back and being like, man, I wish I was this age again. You know what I mean? Like, really like, being in this moment is always, it's always been fun.
No, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
All right. That is the end of part one of Conversations with Blake. We will continue. You will hear more about what it means to him to be part of the Pistons franchise. things that he heard from Chauncey Billups, teammate in LA at one point, and more. As always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.